Welcome to Australian Design Radio, a podcast seeking to provide Australia and the world with conversations and commentary on Australian design. This episode is recorded on Yagara and Turrbal country, and we acknowledge traditional owners, their enduring connection to the land, knowledge and stories, paying respect to their elders, past and present. I'm your host, Matt Leach, and I'm joined by Myla Yeomans.
Hey, Matt. It's great to be back.
Yes, we have been taking a break, an extended break, and talking about what we want the podcast to be, how we can continue to support Australian designers. And thankfully now, I've got some amazing support in you, Amani, Frankie and Grace. And to be honest, without your help, I'm not sure these episodes would have ever seen the light of day. And that'd be a shame because they're really good ones.
Thanks, Matt. I'm super excited about these episodes and I know the others are also super excited about diving in. These upcoming episodes were recorded during the Design Conference 2023.
Yeah, we recorded quite a bit there. And with the next TDC coming up, tickets are now on sale. We thought it was high time we got these out.
Yeah, thankfully the topics are timeless and so they don't really go out of date. And actually this one is a little bit different in terms of format, isn't it?
It is. It's a concept we've been thinking about for a while now, where it's just two well-known creatives just talking, no questions, no host, just a conversation that can go as long as it needs to, that we then edit into a nice little listening package.
In this one, we managed to get Kevin Finn from The Sum Of. He's a friend of the podcast, a branding expert, and he's sitting and talking to, well, actually meeting for the first time, Jasmine Bidia. She is the CEO of InOcean Australia and founder of Fuck the Cupcakes.
It's a great one to restart the podcast as they talk about the culture of conferences, commercializing creativity and that silent war between design and advertising departments.
Ultimately, it's about breaking down barriers, having more valuable exchanges and creating a willingness to learn.
So settle in, and if you like this format, please let us know. We'll still be doing the regular host and guest episodes, but we'd love to hear what you think about this specific style.
We're dropping you into the conversation right near the start where they're still working out what this is all about.
Yeah, in fairness, we tried to keep the instructions as vague as possible so the conversation could naturally evolve. So thank you to Jasmine and Kevin for being our guinea pigs. Your trust is very much appreciated.
Okay, enjoy.
I have noticed that when you stand on stage and you talk to people, they all of a sudden find that they can't ask you really personal questions.
That they can or they can't?
They can. Like, yeah. I've been approached with some really personal questions, comments, which I find. Do you get that as well, Kevin? Or is it just me?
Yeah, I do. I know what you mean. It's and this isn't a slight against being on stage or speaking. It's actually quite a beautiful thing. But in the traditional sense of people being on stage and conferences and speakers, is the edge of the stage was a barrier that people were not able to reach those people. They were the people they looked up to, and they were off the stage into the green room, never to be accessed. And particularly with TDC, but also some other conferences, is those barriers have sort of now come down. And I think expectations have been that those barriers come down. And once you're on stage and you've, whatever you're talking about, you're sharing some of who you are. And that's all people need to feel like, I think I know you enough to not feel threatened or intimidated by just coming up and asking you. I don't think it's a generational thing. I think it's just a structural thing. I think
you might be right.
Yeah, I think it's more of a structural thing that people, and here at TDC as well, I think it's designed that way. It's by design that the speakers are wandering around. But I also feel that there is a sense, particularly with the maybe social media and the younger generations, where access to people that we growing up may never have thought we would have ever had access to, rightly or wrongly. I think the younger generations in particular feel like they have access, but also a right.
And an entitlement to have access to you.
Yeah. And also to, because of that, to say, I'm interested enough to know more. And whether they think it's a personal question or not, they just want to ask. part of that could be a little bit intimidating for the speaker or the person who's getting asked the question. But I think part of it also is it's a beautiful moment where people, through those questions, genuinely want to connect with you. And I think because those barriers are down now, or there are less of them, you have genuine conversations with people. The question then becomes, as the person who might get the personal question, do you want to answer it, or how do you answer it?
Yeah, that's a really big one. In some cases, I'm not going to lie, I didn't want to answer certain questions.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't prepared to be, just because I'm speaking about a subject matter that's really close to my heart and there's a lot of me personally in it, that doesn't mean that I now have all the answers for everyone's questions.
We talked about this earlier, actually, where, you know, you get someone might talk to you and say, I really connected with what you said. And you go, oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. And have a conversation with them about whatever they resonated with. And then it moves on to give me the other answers.
All the other answers. Yeah, and all of them. Yeah. What have you got?
And you're like, that's for all of us to do. But I think it's, again, it's wonderful and it's beautiful that people see, particularly in what you're doing, Jasmine, particularly in the space you're in now, I think it's such a underpopulated space, let's put it that way, in terms of the leadership and what you're doing, what you're talking about. You don't think so?
I'm not sure if it's it feels like there's more people now doing it, and it was very lonely when I started,
that wasn't long ago.
It wasn't long ago, yeah. But I feel like if some person comes out, and it was really, really scary to run all the way from the front and to the front and yell, fuck yeah, I'm doing this, and everyone looking at you like you're crazy. All of a sudden people saw that the response wasn't that bad potentially, although I mean we're not talking about the abuse that I'm copying, but the response in general wasn't what they thought it was, and they thought, oh, maybe I can do something now. And I've connected with lots of other people that are maybe in the same space, or maybe I feel more that other people are doing it. But coming back to the point about that being sort of like a personal thing that I'm doing, I've realized by listening to a lot of the presentations of people that are crafting, like designers, that I'm so envious of that skill to be able to craft something and put it out there into the world. That is so personal. That is very personal in a very different way to what I'm doing. But it's so close to the hearts. And therefore, people want more of it, of that, or whatever it is that people are conveying in their work. It feels this is a very approachable format of a conference to begin with, and designers in general, because you can sense by what they're putting out there and what they're talking about that there's so much of their own identity in it. And when I go to other conferences, I think I spoke to a couple of people here about my experience that I had in like the other end of the spectrum, was like a super commercial advertising conference. No one asks you any questions that are personal.
That's interesting.
No, because every presentation is like one big sales pitch. And it's pretty much just about, and here's what I've done, and look how great I am, and here's my ego, and that's what I believe. But it's not really ever about what you do as a person and what you bring as a person into your work. It's like, here's a company logo and here's what we do and please buy some of it. That's how that feels. And this felt this like designers and their craft feels very different to me.
I think maybe it's you've arrived at the right time in designers' trajectory, because there's been a recent evolution in that way of not just working but talking about design. We evolved from, you know, not too long ago, where a conference like this was literally a portfolio slideshow,
right?
To it wasn't necessarily a sales pitch as such, because everyone in the room isn't going to be a customer or a client, but it was more I need to compete at a very high level with the work that I'm showing, and I'm only going to show my best. And it was kind of like a an early analog version of social media. Just put the best out there and forget about all the warts and all behind the scenes. And we've evolved as a sort of an industry where that curtain's been dropped. And it began with people going up on stage saying, I'm going to show some work, but I'm going to talk about the process of the work. And then it moved on to, I'm going to talk about the work and the process behind it, but then I'm going to tell you about the kind of the context around the story that led us there.
And I find that so beautiful.
Yeah. And now we're at a stage where you'll get a conference like we have here at TDC, and you have two things happening, which is beautiful. One is a willingness to be vulnerable on stage, truly vulnerable on stage. And a willingness is the second thing, a willingness from the audience to accept that vulnerability and support it. And that is, I'd say, in the last decade, if not even less than that, because it wasn't long ago where it was, I'm afraid to go on stage after that speaker because their work is so good, and I've got to match that, and I've got to come across sounding all professional, and I know what I'm doing, and I have to be perfect. So we've come from that space, which is a really interesting evolution.
But that is that is literally the opposite of what I've experienced with sort of the area of communications that I'm in, because that comes, what you just described, is a feeling of inadequacy, and a feeling of not good enough and beating yourself up and wanting to be better. I'm meeting a lot of people in my industry that are on stage where I'm wondering who put them there and why they're even talking, because there's this like overblown sort of ego of believing that they've got all the answers without actually having the answers at all. And designers seem to do it the other way around. In fact, there's a point where I thought, collectively looking in the room, I feel there is not enough emphasis on the value that design and craft brings. So as someone like myself that actually works, as someone that runs a company and needs to commercialize creativity, I have learned so much this week. My mind was completely blown of things that I didn't know. And I thought to myself, why aren't more people like me need to listen to this and actually need to understand the level of creativity that is in rooms like this that we're totally not exposed to?
Well, it's interesting because with that vulnerability and you're talking about the value and stuff, underpinning all that is almost to a fault. There is a humility in design saying, here's all my successes, but you know, it could all just go away tomorrow, and I'm actually, I don't know how I got here, and it was all by accident, and I can't believe people like me, and I'll just keep doing what I'm doing.
That's how I feel every day.
No, but there's so you've got that end of the pendulum now on stage where you've got these designers and craft people and everything almost apologetically presenting their work. And I think we need to move the needle a little bit back to the middle where it is, I believe in what I'm doing. I believe there's value here. I believe that enough people like it. Not everyone has to, and that's okay. And I believe I'm doing something that I find meaning in, and other businesses that I work with also see meaning in that. And that's a great value exchange. We've got to get back to the value exchange.
The value exchange, I think, is what keeps the industry alive, right? Yeah. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's it's also about commercials.
Yeah. Well, and also that comes down to designers traditionally have had a really difficult relationship with money.
Is there anyone talking about this stuff?
Yep.
Like also in like education, like in some sort of design council or the context about how do you commercialize that level of creativity? And is that level of conversation where it needs to be?
There's a number of people who are doing it. I'd say the one who's probably doing it currently the most successfully, because he's using a lot of online tools, is a gentleman called Chris Dole.
Yeah.
Out of the States, where I saw Chris, you know, Chris from.
Yeah.
And Chris is, he's managed to connect with that mindset I mentioned earlier, that vulnerability. I can't believe people value me. I don't know how to talk about money. Money is an awkward conversation for me. I just want to create. He's been at the center of that and saying, here's how you need to think.
Yeah.
But there aren't enough people in that space, I don't think, talking about that and helping to move the conversation to that space. Because a lot of people don't want to feel like sellouts. It's a weird sort of...
Is that because you're sort of more at the intersection of making art and then selling that?
Yeah, I mean...
I've got all these really naive, super sort of observations of someone that doesn't work deep in the space.
No. I think it's because it's a good sort of observation and question. I think it's more a case of there's probably a few things going on. First of all, we've never really been trained or taught in the language of business. Number one, that's
biggest observation
had. That's a big deficiency there. You know, that's just there. But the other is the very nature of what designers do is commercial, because you're engaged by another business or a brand, and you have to, how I describe it is, service their very narrow marketing needs.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got to push all your craft and everything into that funnel that is going to service that narrow marketing need. But inside that, as a service and as an industry, which is exactly what it should be, because that's, you know, you're commissioned to do that, this putting yourself into the work borders designers on, but I'm also like doing art, I'm also doing craft, it has to be my work. So we've got this weird relationship between we are working in service of someone else's commercial marketing needs, and we need to help them achieve that. That's the job of design. And then the designer saying, but I want to put my own mark on this work as well, which may or may not be tweaked, adapted, rejected, revised by the business you're working with. So you'll find people, at least you in years gone by, you might find people a little bit bitter or a bit annoyed with clients not liking what I do, because there's not enough of my work in there, or my personality, versus other people saying, we can put enough personality in this as long as it meets the needs and acknowledge it meets the needs of that commercial entity. So there's a really...
That's the dichotomy that you see in any creative services industry,
totally.
Where you put your heart out there and you want the client to buy that and you want some of yourself in that.
Yes, for sure. But if you put that in the same package of, we don't have the language of business or the articulation of business as a field, generally, you can go and learn it yourself, but it's not part of the education, really.
I find that really interesting. I wrote that down, and one of my sort of action points walking away from here was that I have to explore that a little bit further, because this is sort of the line. This is like, I'm the world's greatest salesperson.
opportunity.
I just felt like, how can I help make this better? Or maybe there's some other wisdom that I've got here to convey as someone that commercializes creativity every day, how that's being remunerated, appreciated, and how that actually also fits with my line of work, how that sits together and how it enables each other. And also thinking about, profit isn't a dirty word, and it shouldn't be. And you should have, you know, that's, I think, what we need to get to. And I think maybe... Mm-hmm. I feel like I've got another keynote coming on that I need to write on this topic.
I think it's language, honestly. Because, you know, when we start talking about commercializing stuff, designers will recoil. The majority will go, some will go, yes, I want to get paid for this and I want to know how to do it.
That's literally what that means, right?
Yeah, but I think when you start to say stuff like, you need people to know your value. So you start talking about value. People need to understand the value you bring, and then the same outcome, right? You're getting paid, but the language isn't, you're commercializing it, because that's very salesy language.
Was it Jim yesterday who talked about it? Thinking, or was that you? And that considering more about the impact that you're making. It was you, wasn't it?
Both of you.
I think everyone kind of said it in different ways, and in my little clumsy way with not having so many words. I was trying to say, consider what you can make, right? What your imprint is on the world with what it is that you're doing. So maybe the language needs to be more about consider the impact that you're making.
But also I think it's most designers will consider or have some kind of a consideration of the impact that they feel or believe they're having. What needs to happen is the businesses that they work with need to understand what that impact is, and they need to see what that value is. And we as a field don't really have that language, or we're not comfortable with that
language. Which is what I would call business acumen.
Absolutely. And what I have been encouraged, I should sort of correct myself here, I've been really encouraged from some people on stage at TDC for the last few days, are bucking that trend. They are saying we have a value and we need to get remunerated for that value. And they're starting to, without being so salesy, commercial, cutthroat type of, that's the kind of mental image that
that's the fear
that, like, oh, that's what
it doesn't
be.
Need there's so much it's not black or white, right? There's so much gray space in between that you can maybe dial up a little bit.
And I think that, you know, the language, I'm a language person, odd for a visual designer, but I think it comes down to something as basic as back yourself. Just if you, as you described earlier, that, you know, the passion that they see in their work and their craft, they back themselves in that. And then I think when you go to sell it or share it or transact with it, I think we just need to get comfortable backing ourselves there as well.
It's confidence. Belief.
It's belief. I mean, the belief is there and the confidence is there, but I think when you put them into the money conversation, imposter syndrome kicks in, doubt kicks in. I can't possibly ask for that amount of money. And I have a sense that, you know, if you don't value yourself, you can't expect anyone to value. So it has to come back to us first.
I don't know. I'm like, it's with businesses that you're selling stuff, so that's a very basic value equation, right? Where you need to be able to have the business acumen to demonstrate your return on investment. Like, basically, it's all about bottom line at the end of the day.
Yep.
What value are you driving, or what impact are you making for the business, and how you quantify that?
Yep. Yeah. And I
confidence. Fuck the confidence. Like, if you can show, if you can demonstrate.
Yep.
Yeah. But actually, you're right. Backing yourself, and maybe it comes through maybe numbers.
Yeah. Well,
maybe there needs to be some numbers in the equation.
Well, the way I see it is, like I mentioned in my talk, is that most people will go, businesses, but also designers or creative people who are going to a business and presenting to a client or whatever, and they just talk about their work and them and what they've done, and this is the idea, and as I say, it's all their story. And I say the way to maybe have that backing yourself and the confidence to speak in terms of businesses is to understand the business's story first and say, this is what you need. This is what your challenge is. This is what you're facing. I understand that. And here's where I show up with the work to solve that problem for you, rather than, here's a solution you have to take because I like it and I want it in my portfolio and I spent 4 weeks on this or 3 months on this and you can't not like it and here's all the reasons and sell, but from a defensive point of view,
I get that.
As opposed to coming in saying, I know your story and here's where my story shows up. And that, I think, is the beginning of a business going, that's the value that you're offering me, is appearing in our challenge here to solve that part of the problem. That I understand that now, and I understand that if that gets solved, that has a ripple effect in our business, so there's value there. Okay, so we just need to get better at explaining rather than telling our own story,
because you're all storytellers, you guys. I've seen that.
It's part of, whether it's a visual storytelling or a verbal or both, it is part of the process. But I'm fascinated that you've been so profoundly
I'm a profoundly curious person about many, many things, and wherever I go I like to try to understand the context and the background and why things are the way they are.
But you didn't expect this is kind of what you're saying. Yeah, I find that really interesting.
Didn't expect this at all. It's just maybe I'm just surrounded by too many wankers and what I do really, you know, I just went, oh God, everyone's so nice. Everyone's so humble. It's got amazing skills that I could need more of. But why don't then? And then I try to work out why don't I have these skills and the people that I'm working with? Oh, because they are designers and no one knows how to commercialize design in an advertising agency. So why is that? Oh, because no, that's a silo usually where the leadership on there isn't very commercialized and not very queued up or trained into how to sell that. So it's then therefore its own thing as opposed to being built into complex services that we're bringing for really, really big clients. Like, why wouldn't design be part of that solution? I mean, all of a sudden, and the kind of person that I am, I just go, okay, so we have UX, UI designers, but it's sort of like part of like a bigger integrated sort of campaign. Mm. And that looks very different to the work that I've seen here. But I had so many questions for myself to kind of go, well, have I maybe fucked this up in the agency the way I've set it up? Maybe we need to do that differently. How do we enable designers?
Yeah, I have some experience in that because I used to work at Saatchi's, right?
And you and me both.
Yeah. But we had a leader as a director.
Yeah.
So Joe Churchwood, right?
Yeah.
And he was adamant with the agency that we as a design team are not the agency's high-level production studio.
Because this is what I've observed. I've observed this a lot. I've spoken to a couple of young designers here that are now working in advertising agencies. And I said I'd be really interested to see how that will develop and how it makes them feel. So they get more exposure to very interesting things, but be really, really careful that you don't become the
production,
the extended production department where you kind of like just get handed things, just make them pretty, right?
Well, because of that leadership with Joe, we were able to push back and say, we're not here to work for you guys, we're here to work with you. And we will work within whatever campaigns, whatever projects you're doing. If it needs a design component, we will bring a design mindset to that. But we will not just be told what to do. And it took 2 years. This is the interesting thing. I think
Is anyone doing it well?
Well, at the time within the Saatchi network, we were the only ones doing it.
But now?
I don't know.
Because I don't think so, because I only hear there's like design studios and sort of like...
I think what's happening now is that big agencies are acquiring design studios and they're trying to let the studios run themselves. And after a couple of years, then they just ruin and pollute the culture and it becomes...
I'm going to do an experiment.
Go for it.
I'm going to try that. I'm going to come away from this conference. I'm going to have a chat internally about how we do that and how we do that better. And the right kind of leadership that we need to provide for designers and actually give it a go and see what comes of it.
Do you know what happened with us is we spent 2 years, myself, my co-creative director, Julian Melhuish, and Joe Church were doing our best to educate the agency about design and educate them and to varying degrees of success. And then we won a D&AD yellow pencil. And the whole agency just went, you guys know what you're doing. Wow, you're good. And most of the creatives had never got a pencil.
No.
None of them were. So they were looking at us with envy and all of a sudden we became the authority. And it was at that moment I thought the currency of the creative advertising field is awards.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah, it is. So I think leadership with Joe and holding the line at a director level.
Yep.
And secondly, whatever means possible to prove the creative muscle of the design component of the agency that the agency sees on par. It's a very hierarchical, I find, condescending industry because the creatives look down on everybody else, including the account service and everything. It's like, you're here to serve us. They're like toddlers. What I've seen, and any advertising person listening to this, you know, you can shout and scream at this, but what I've seen is maybe it's changed now, but a real lack.
It really depends on what kind of company you look into,
and the people too.
I would say I'm pride myself on that not being the case.
Yeah,
But it really depends. I think in most cases, you're absolutely right. But yeah, it's a setup, right? It's a hierarchy, and where does design sit within it? What's the role?
Yeah.
Who's fighting in your corner for it?
Yeah, yeah.
I was here this week and I felt like I want to fight for all of these people. I want to be in all of their corners. They're doing amazing things that I can't do and that I didn't know existed. That just makes me feel really good.
But you know, the other interesting thing is, you might agree, is that there is a percentage of the design community and many of the people on stage who actually don't get caught up in all that stuff, and they just overtake a lot of the advertising creative work.
I do realize,
because
that too.
Yeah, because we've got other motivators, we've got other incentives just to create work and to do the best we can, whereas the advertising field is like, we kind of need to win awards to progress our career. So there's a very narrow sort of view. And also with advertising, usually it's like, we need to have some kind of a gag in here or humor, or it has to have a salesy sort of.
No, so it's not like that anymore. Well, it is. Yeah. It is. It still is.
But there's a sort of a box that advertising fits in really well. But the design field, and I'm not saying this out of bias and like, you know, we're better than them, but it's just because they're not the same drivers.
No.
For most of
the work that I've seen here, my creative team would have gone, what do you mean? Like a design studio did that?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe they did that. Yep. I think they would get their brains blown out by seeing this here.
Yeah.
It's quite incredible.
And I think there's possibly a willingness to just explore and experiment in the design world that crosses many, many kind of facets. Where, I mean, it could be different now, but in the advertising world, at least when I was there, it's a while ago now, it was quite formulaic. Play, but in these kind of silos.
It's advertising has changed so much because the channels have become so complex, right? And it's the same. I've got a business problem. Can you please fix it? But the answer is always paid media outputs, whereas you guys are set free.
Yep.
Your answer might be something that doesn't exist. Right, and it's that's the dream of every creative. I just don't think that the creatives that I've got in my business understand that they could think the way designers were if we just had more design thinking and designers together working with us. I think it's just, I feel like I need to tear down a wall.
Well, I have a question for you, because there's been an observation I've had for maybe 15 plus years, is that one of the vulnerabilities of the advertising world has been the business model in the past. Mm. And the business model has been, we want to go in with a pitch, which may not be paid, like pitch, a competition, and we need to sell the idea, or actually give the idea away for free so we can sell the production.
Yeah, that's no longer.
That's not, because
no, it is in some. I'm sure it's just some agencies are doing it, but like,
because that can't happen anymore. Well, it can't, because
we're really lucky. I don't have to pitch.
Because first of all, because the production budgets have just shrunk, and the greatest value, we talk about value.
Production is being brought in house these days, and there are smaller suppliers that are doing that. That's no longer how agencies make money.
Exactly, but what has had to change is the greatest value ad agencies had to offer was creative thinking and ideas, and they gave it away for free to get the production of those ideas that were paid for. And that was, I just found that fascinating.
Yeah, that happened for a really long time, but yeah. I think it's one step even further removed from that. The notion that creativity sits within 10 people sitting in a creative department blows my mind, because you know, what's the definition of a creative person in that business, right? Like, technically, you could call me an account. I worked as a commercial group account director for many years, just also because, you know, I was a writer and I couldn't really write well in Australian language, which I still struggle with. And I always was curious. I wanted to be a strategist. I wanted to be a producer. I wanted to do all of these things, right? So I feel I can call myself I feel like I'm always need to be like third best at everything, except of design, because I don't have any skills in that. But I feel like I need to understand it all, and I need to make sure that I understand how all of this sort of works. And I call myself an inherently creative person, but my job title for a very long time was something like group of counteractor. That's like the most uncreative title in the world. But by definition of it depends on the kind of person that you are. Yep. You're so excited about the product that you make that just qualifies you to actually, you know, have a point of view in it and like bring us forward, I feel.
Yeah. It's clearly, I think the advertising world is still what we used to call a cousin of the design world.
Yeah, it is a cousin.
But not really a close family member.
No, it's like a second cousin.
Yeah, and I twice find that removed.
it makes me really sad.
Yeah. And what I also think, and you mentioned it earlier as well, is that I think the advertising world sort of might look up to some design if they're aware of it, but sees it as a supplier. For them,
a service provider,
as opposed to a partner.
Yeah. I think you're 100% right.
And I think that is to the detriment of the advertising world. We're painting
ourselves in like smaller and smaller boxes. Our remit is shrinking, right? So you've got a media specialist, you've got digital specialists, and you've got designers. And if we don't integrate and bring these people in, we are just painting ourselves into smaller and smaller boxes.
How many examples on stage in the last 3 days have been, so we're a design company, we have people working in all of the places doing, these are musicians, they're poets, and you just go, that's normal. That's how we think, that's normal.
Correct. But that is it's like the world's best kept secret.
Well, no, I think again with design, it's like, it's logical, just don't get caught up with this, carry on. It's not like we need to go and stick it to them.
Maybe that's what I'm drawn towards, because that attitude I really like. I don't like this sort of self-promotion.
No, so just get on with it.
Garble. I can't believe, by the way, it's like Friday night and it's 6 o'clock and we're having like a business conversation about creativity, and I think it's my fault.
I'm following your lead. No. all the stuff we've been talking about for the last half hour or so, and particularly from your point of view, from the advertising world, or the non-design world, let's say, where or how do you see those two worlds can come together in a way that you're not seeing now? How do you think that bridge can actually be built?
I think I don't actually have the answer to that, Kevin.
But you have all the answers.
I've got all the answers. I'm the woman, all the answers. Find me for all the answers that you need to all of your problems.
Yes.
My problem is that I now feel like it is my role. That's the kind of person that I am. I see something that I think doesn't make any sense in the industry that I'm working in, or with people that I'm really fond of. And then I want to fix it. I've been my entire life, I've been like this is fucked, let's do something about it kind of person. So now I feel I've got this immense burden on my shoulder that I got to walk out here to kind of actually want to have a think about it.
Yeah.
I actually feel like I need to talk some more people about it and have an opinion and see what can be done. I think I'm not really particularly passionate about advertising. It just happens to be the job that I'm in. And I find, I think it is important that people like I exist.
Yeah,
because the people like me hold the media, the paid dollars of media accountable.
Yeah,
and I think it's my responsibility to make sure that we all remember that it's our responsibility to redefine what aspirational culture looks like.
Yeah.
So if I'm coming through that lens, then I need to consider what the role of design is in that, and how I and other business leaders can make sure there's a really, really, really strong bridge and that there's learnings. I feel there's no learning exchange. So maybe that's where it starts.
Because I was just going to say that I think, you know, what we're talking about here feels a bit one-sided on the design, you know, design good, advertising, you know, average. I think what advertising can bring is that real understanding of the commerciality, value, the business acumen of very clear strategic thinking for commercial contexts, which design could learn from. And I know that from personal experience, because I didn't have that before I went to Saatchi's.
Yeah.
And I spent years sitting in strategy meetings, just a fly in the wall going, I'm like in a masterclass here. I didn't get taught any of this.
No.
And I think that's where I think the exchange happens. I don't call it a transaction. I don't call it even an equal exchange, because it could be, you know, equal, it could be unbalanced, but the exchange I think is going to have value. And I think seeing each other as equals, because I don't think it's that way at the moment.
It's not.
And also, I think in many designers will look down on advertising as kind of like the...
I've introduced myself to every person here in a very unapologetic way, sorry, I know nothing about design and I just run an ad agency. Essentially what I've said to everyone, sort of being super apologetic about it.
Because, because we have these perceptions that, you know, depending on who you are, where you are, what side of the fence on, one seems better than the other, one seems more ethical than the other, or whatever it might be. And I think we need to, just like this, go back to the beginning of our conversation, take the stage. Whoever's on the stage, whether it's advertising or design, take that barrier down and have that more accessible exchange with both fields in a way that everyone is finding value exchange and everyone grows together. But that takes a willingness, that takes a mindset, that takes a kind of acknowledgement of wanting to learn and also wanting to offer value unconditionally. So maybe that's a path forward.
I agree.
Well, hello. I hope you enjoyed that. What do you think, Milo? I think it went pretty well, that format.
Yeah, I think it was also lucky to have Kevin Finn doing this first one. He's pretty adept with the questions.
Yeah, that's a fair point. He is. Well, I guess the audience is just going to have to tune into the next one to see if a sans Kevin conversation will be just as good.
And speaking of the audience, thank you so much for tuning in and listening. If you have any questions or feedback, please drop us a line at hello@ozdesignradio.com.
Oh, and if you could give us a review on Spotify or iTunes, that would be amazing.
Till next time.
See ya.